Chapter 22.
The soldier in the field and the crew member aboard a warship inevitably see a war from a limited perspective. Their goal is to carry out their mission or their appointed task, and trust that their commanders are aware of the larger situation and the vast matrix of facts, positions, options, and dangers. Leadership is a role and a task that should never be aspired to lightly. Neither should loyalty be given without reason, even if the primary reason is nothing more than the soldier's oath and duty. A true leader will work to prove worthy of a deeper trust. But leadership and loyalty are both two-bladed weapons. Each can be twisted from its intended purpose. The consequences are never pleasant.
"Persuade them if you can,"
Fleet Admiral Jock Danasius said, his face on the hollow grim and angry.
"Devastate them if you have to, but stop them one way or another, and stop them fast."
"Understood, Fleet Admiral,"
Thrawn said, his voice steady and cool. A lot steadier, Eli thought, and a lot cooler than he himself was feeling right now. And from the expressions he could see on the rest of the Chimera's bridge crew, he wasn't alone in his misgivings. Small wonder. It hadn't been all that long since the Separatist crisis sparked the bloody devastation of the Clone Wars. Billions had died in that conflict, with hundreds of planets all but destroyed, and thousands more still clawing their way up from the brink. The last thing the galaxy could afford was a repeat of that horror. But Governor Kessel and the people of Bodajeff were apparently ready to give it a try. Thrawn and Danasius finished their conversation, and the hollow blanked. For a moment, Thrawn continued to gaze at the empty projector, as if pondering the orders he'd just received. Then, lifting his head a few centimeters, he turned to face his senior officers.
"Commander Feyre, instruct the helm to lay in a course for Bodajeff," he ordered.
"Yes, sir."
Feyre looked over at the helmsman, who was, Eli noted, already watching her closely, and lifted a finger. The helmsman nodded back and turned to his board.
"On course for Bodajeff, Commodore,"
Feyre confirmed.
"Thank you."
Thrawn looked around the group.
"Comments? Senior Lieutenant Pyrondi."
"With all due respect, sir, I think they're crazy,"
Weapons Officer Pyrondi said, a bit hesitantly. As the newest addition to the Chimera's Bridge Officer Corps, she was still getting used to Thrawn's unique style of open tactical consultation.
"Do they really think they can secede from the Empire all by themselves?"
"Who says they are all by themselves?"
Feyre countered soberly.
"There's a lot of unrest out there in the galaxy, and it's growing."
"Though it's mostly just grumbling," Eli said.
"So far,"
Feyre said pointedly.
"But who's to say Kessel hasn't got 100 other systems quietly backing him? All of them just waiting to see how far he gets before making independence proclamations of their own."
"Not far is exactly where he's going to get,"
Pyrondi said.
"I mean, seriously, ma'am. We've got enough firepower here to carve our initials into Bodajeff's bedrock."
"A fact Governor Kessel is undoubtedly aware of," Thrawn said. "What then does he hope to gain by his words of defiance?"
"That's the question, sir,"
Feyre agreed.
"If he's the representative for a lot of other systems, just slapping him down won't necessarily solve the problem. It might even exacerbate it. If he's alone,"
she gestured to Pyrondi,
"then Lieutenant Pyrondi is very likely right. The man is crazy."
"Though if he is, he's picked a great place to show it off,"
Pyrondi said.
"I've met a few Jeffies in my life. They're the best followers in the world. You persuade them they're your leader, and they'll follow you anywhere. And even with all the immigration over the past century, they're still a solid 85% of the planetary population."
"Yet they didn't complain about Coruscant appointing a human governor over them?" Eli asked.
Like I said, sir, they're followers,
Pyrondi said.
Prove you're a leader, and they're there. Kessel must have proved it, and then some.
That is my reading of the Jeffies as well,
Thrawn agreed.
Which suggests that the best strategy may be to create a new leader for them.
Assuming they're just blindly following Kessel, sir, and haven't bought into this secession thing themselves,
Pyrondi warned.
You get a group of Jeffy true believers, and they may not need a leader to tell them what to do. There's a lot we don't know about them.
Then we should learn, Thrawn said. Commander Pharaoh, how long until we reach Botajev?
Pharaoh checked her datapad.
Approximately 15 hours, sir.
I'll be in my quarters, Thrawn said. You have the bridge, Commander Pharaoh. I want the Chimera fully ready for combat 14 hours from now.
It will be, Commodore,
Pharaoh said grimly.
And in her eyes, Eli could see the flickering, burning memories of her own Clone Wars experiences.
Count on it.
The history of Botajev was one of long periods of passive allegiance, followed by brief episodes of often fiery conflict, followed by new leadership and another era of passive allegiance. Jeffy art followed that same pattern. Curves interrupted by stark lines or sharp angles, with a color palette mirroring the group emotional and ethical spectrum. Sculpts were low contrast, perhaps indicating that the Jeffies themselves recognized the shortcomings in their cultural matrix. In contrast, the hanging trestles, with their quick dampening balances, indicated they also recognized the basic stability of their political system.
Commodore? Vanto's voice came. Enter.
Vanto crossed the floor, passing through the holograms.
Jeffy art?
Yes.
Nice,
Vanto said, his gaze moving between the pieces.
A bit jagged for my taste, but nice.
I came to inform you, Commodore, that we're 2 hours from Botajev, and the Chimera is ready for battle.
Thank you, Commander, Thrawn said. You seem troubled. Are you concerned about the upcoming confrontation?
I am,
Vanto said. But probably not in the way everyone else is. I'm concerned that we were given this assignment because certain people are trying to set you up.
Have you any evidence for this?
No evidence, but plenty of logic,
Vanto said.
We know there are government officials who don't like you. Many of whom also dislike non-humans in general. So now we have a largely non-human world proclaiming independence, with a hefty system defense fleet to back it up. The two most likely outcomes are, first, that you'll stomp the Jeffies into the dirt, or second, that the Botajev Defense Force will overwhelm us and chase us out of the system.
Fortunately, there are more than just those options.
I hope so, Vanto said. Because in my first scenario, Coruscant can paint you as the mad alien run amok, who stomped a world of innocent Jeffies and humans who were just obeying their appointed leader. In the second scenario, you get painted as incompetent, and they kick you down to commanding an ore carrier.
Interesting that you should choose that example, Thrawn said.
The Jeffy art hollows vanished, replaced by a map of the Empire.
Do you recall the position Captain Filia Rossi held before commanding the Blood Crow?
First officer on an ore freighter escort, wasn't it?
Yes, Thrawn said. I'm aware that you and some of the others had reservations at the time about her capability and seniority. But consider what we now know about how Dunium and other metals are being taken from the general market. It may be that the ore freighters she was escorting were more important than anyone knew at the time.
Interesting, Vanto said thoughtfully.
Not just that, but I seem to recall now that her previous posting was to Socorro.
Lots of Dunium in the asteroid belts there.
I wonder.
As you say, no one knew what those freighters meant. I wonder if that could have led to someone being a little less careful with security than they are now.
Indeed, Thrawn said. In which case, it should be possible to track the shipments and discover where this operation is occurring.
I can try. Banto frowned as the word caught his attention. Operation Singular? You think this is a single project?
I do, Thrawn said.
Consider. Hyperdrive components are being taken from supply depots, but no assembled hyperdrives are disappearing. Sublight engine components are likewise being taken, but no completed engines.
Interesting,
Banto said slowly. Though that could just mean they don't want to lug around things that are that bulky.
Perhaps, Thrawn said. Though there are certainly transports large enough to carry such items.
My conclusion is that they may be creating hyperdrives and sublight engines of a size never before seen.
Banto's eyes widened in shock. You're saying something bigger even than a Star Destroyer?
From my reading of the data, considerably larger, Thrawn said. I confess I feel a certain foreboding at that conclusion. I have seen this same Omseki syndrome.
I've seen this syndrome before, Thrawn continued. Star Destroyer-sized capital ships and large numbers of supporting starfighters are the most efficient and flexible naval array for both deterrent and combat. Yet there are many who consider larger to be the equivalent of better. Even the Empire has limited resources, and I fear that those resources are not always allocated wisely.
The realities of a large bureaucracy, Banto said ruefully. Two bureaucracies in this case, if you count both the government and the Navy. There are always boondoggles. Sometimes really big ones that slip through the cracks of the review process.
That is unfortunately true, Thrawn said.
Perhaps I will yet have an opportunity to express my thoughts on the strategies of such large-scale weapons systems.
Well, you get invited to Coruscant often enough,
Banto pointed out.
Maybe...
He trailed off, suddenly understanding.
You know where it is, don't you? You figured out where they're building this monstrosity.
I have an idea.
I should have guessed you would, Banto said. I take it you've tracked Rossi's ore freighters?
I was unable to discover their final destination, Thrawn said. However, I did find the most likely vector for the shipments.
Which only gives you...
Banto smiled with fresh understanding.
But we also have the likely vector for that Wookiee slave ship.
So assuming they were all headed to the same place, he crossed the vectors?
And found a location, Thrawn said. It may not be the correct location, of course. Perhaps an opportunity to visit will present itself at some point. In the meantime, we have Bertichev to deal with.
Yes, Banto said. I presume you have a plan?
I do.
The galactic map disappeared, replaced by the image of a human standing behind a podium.
This is the recording of Governor Kessel's Declaration of Independence 30 hours ago.
Yes, I've seen it.
Banto said.
Speech-wise, the man really lights up a room.
Did you notice the artwork hanging on the display wall behind him?
All 57 pieces of it.
Banto smiled wryly.
Yes, I counted them. I also made hollows of every piece visible on that recording, in case you wanted to see what you could pull out about the man.
Thank you, Thrawn said. However, it won't tell us anything about the governor. The artwork has been collected over the centuries by the Jeffy people, and neither the pieces nor the placement have been altered by Governor Kessel.
Which you know because you've already checked the older archives,
Banto said, a bit crestfallen.
Well, it seemed like a good idea at the time.
It was an excellent idea, Thrawn said. In other circumstances, it might well have been highly useful. But I draw your attention to the governor's words and speaking manner. What do you hear?
Well, he's not shy about his goals or feelings, Vanto said. Makes it very clear he has no intention of keeping Bodajeff in the Empire.
Yet should he not also show some recognition of the power that will surely be brought to bear against him?
One would certainly think so, Vanto said, rubbing his chin in concentration.
Now that you mention it, he's almost daring Coruscant to come in and stop him.
I make a prediction, Thrawn said. I believe that upon our arrival, we will find heavy weaponry situated around the main governmental building. I also predict that Governor Kessel will repeat his challenge directly to the Chimera.
Really? Vanto said. And the Planetary Defense Forces?
He will initially deploy them to keep the Chimera at a distance. At some later point, they will be sent to the attack.
Interesting tactics, Vanto said.
We'll find out soon enough.
Indeed, Thrawn said. You may return to the bridge now. When you arrive, have Starfighter Commander Yeeve and Stormtrooper Commander Aya report to me here. I have some final orders for them.
The Chimera reached Bodajeff exactly on schedule. And damned if Thrawn hadn't been right.
Two CR-90 Corvettes rising from orbit, Eli reported, running a quick eye over the tactical readout. Coming in from starboard and port, possibly trying to flank us, but keeping out of effective firing range. Five squadrons of V-19 Torrent interceptors rising from the North Polar base. Two more squadrons coming from South Polar.
Both Corvettes' weapon systems are running cold, Pharaoh added. We may have taken them by surprise.
Reading three ground-based turbolaser clusters, Eli said, smiling to himself. Coordinates on tactical. Note that one of them is in the capital. Five turbolasers grouped around the governor's palace.
Around the palace? Pharaoh echoed disbelievingly. He's really counting on Imperial self-restraint, isn't he?
Eli thought back to the battle over Umbara, and the pinpoint fire the Thunder Wasp had later delivered to the pre-spice vein on Sifar.
More likely he doesn't understand Imperial gunner accuracy, ma'am.
Perhaps we will have the opportunity to instruct him, Thrawn said. Senior Lieutenant Yeeve, launch Ties.
Ties launching, Commodore,
Yeeve acknowledged.
Targets?
Send four each to the Corvettes, Thrawn ordered. They are not to fire, but are to perform close-line flybys. Two each starboard and port side. The other Ties will move to form a screen between us and the V-19s.
Including the special unit, sir?
Yes, Thrawn said. They are not to fire until and unless I so order.
Yes, sir.
Yeeve turned to her board. Eli frowned. He hadn't heard anything about a special Tie unit. Something Thrawn and Yeeve had cooked up after he left Thrawn's quarters for the bridge?
You're not letting the Ties defend themselves, sir?
Pharaoh asked.
I'm offering the Jeffies one free shot, Commander, Thrawn replied calmly. That said, I do not believe they will make the first attack.
Commodore, we're getting a signal from Governor Kessel, Lomar called.
Put it through.
The comm display lit up with the same wizened, scowly face Eli had seen on the previous recording. Kessel was standing closer to the cam this time, and up close, he looked even more unpleasant and shifty.
This is Governor Kessel of the Free System of Bodajeff,
he intoned.
You have intruded into Jeffy's space. If you do not leave, you will be fired upon.
This is Commodore Thrawn, commander of the Imperial Star Destroyer Chimera, Thrawn said. I am afraid you are acting under a misapprehension, Governor. According to the treaty signed by the Jeffies after the Clone War, any change in status must follow the formal rules called for in Section 18, Paragraph 4. The wizened face drew back from the cam, and Eli caught a glimpse of the artwork hanging on the wall behind him.
What are you talking about? There is no such treaty!
On the tactical, the four TIE fighters swept past the starboard corvette, as Thrawn had ordered. Eli held his breath, wondering if the corvette would see it as an attack and open fire. Fortunately, it didn't. Aside from a brief twitch of its bow, in fact, it made no response at all. The portside corvette was even more sanguine in the case of its starfighter flyby, without even that small reflexive twitch.
Your lack of knowledge regarding your assigned post is puzzling, Thrawn said. Under the circumstances, I must draw your attention to paragraph 7. That proviso states that before any talks may be opened, the governor or other leader must fully disarm. He gestured toward the tactical. I must therefore insist that those turbolaser emplacements around your palace be removed.
Oh, you insist, do you?
Kessel retorted in a condescending tone.
So, Commodore or not, Imperial Star Destroyer or not, you still dare not face a free people and their weapons? Afraid our bite is as bad as our bark?
He folded his arms across his chest, a mocking smile on his face.
You want those turbo lasers gone, Commodore Thrawn? Fine. Do it yourself!
Very well, Thrawn said. He gestured to Yeeve. Senior Lieutenant?
Yes, sir,
Yeeve said.
Special Unit 1, go!
On the tactical, six of the TIE fighters that had been moving to intercept the V-19s abruptly broke formation. Weaving easily through the defenders' formation, they headed straight in toward the capital and the palace.
What? No!
Kessel shouted.
Defenders, defend!
The turbo lasers opened fire, their brilliant blast sizzling through the air toward the incoming fighters. It was an exercise in futility. Yeeve had trained her TIE pilots superbly, and the starfighters themselves were fast and nimble. They evaded the blast with ease, approaching the palace even as the defenders' fire increased.
It is not too late to surrender, Governor, Thrawn said.
Never!
Kessel spat. His face was taut with expectation. His eyes focused somewhere off cam.
I will die with dignity and grace, and with the full strength and defiance of the Jeffy people at my side.
Your spirit is admirable, Thrawn said, but your dramatics are quite unnecessary. Observe the power and the skill of the Imperial Navy.
The TIEs had reached the palace, and their laser cannons opened fire. But they weren't targeting the palace. Even as they twisted and turned and jinked to avoid the frantic turbo laser blasts, they instead poured salvo after salvo into the weapons themselves. One of the turbo lasers disintegrated in a brilliant blast of shattered metal and ceramic. The second went, then the third.
Commander Pharaoh,
Thrawn called. Eli blinked. So engrossed had he become in the deadly dance at the planet's surface that he'd forgotten to keep track of the situation in the Chimera's immediate vicinity. He looked at the tactical to discover that, while he'd been distracted, the Chimera had somehow drifted a significant distance to starboard toward the corvette still holding position there. A blue line appeared on the tactical, marking the activation of one of the Star Destroyer's tractor beams. And on the comm display, Kessel gasped as his image gave a violent jerk. Eli looked back at the tactical as it belatedly hit him. He's on the corvette?
Indeed, Thrawn said, the faintest hint of satisfaction in his voice. Along with the extremely valuable art collection that you see behind him. My apologies, Governor, for failing to cooperate in your hoped-for destruction of the palace. It would have rather effectively covered up your theft, as well as enraging the Jeffies into launching a full attack on the Chimera. I expect you hope to slip away to freedom during the resulting chaos.
On the display, Kessel was breathing heavily, his face a mask of hatred and despair.
They'll never believe you,
he bit out.
The Jeffies are loyal to me.
They are loyal to a respected leader,
Thrawn countered, his voice going cold.
I do not believe they will see you as such beyond this day.
For a moment, Kessel glared. Then he seemed to wilt. Offering Thrawn another mocking smile, he half turned to look at the wall behind him.
They're worth hundreds of millions, Commodore. Maybe even billions. And all they do is sit collecting dust in a third-rate building on a fifth-rate world. Billions!
He turned back, some of the melancholy replaced by puzzlement.
But there are two identical corvettes. How did you know I was on this one?
This starfighter flyby, Thrawn said. Your pilot twitched with reaction to what he feared would be an impending collision. Human crew. The other corvette trusted their leader implicitly, and thus showed no such fear. Jeffy crew. You, of course, could not rely on Jeffies to assist you in their betrayal.
Kessel sighed.
So that's it?
Hardly, Thrawn assured him. You and your crew must still be brought aboard the Chimera. The artwork must be returned. The Jeffies need to be enlightened, and a new leader must be chosen until Coruscant can send a new governor. His eyes glittered. Later, of course, there will be your trial.
He let the last word hang in the air for a moment, perhaps inviting Kessel the chance to respond. But the governor remained silent. Thrawn gestured for the comm display to be blanked.
So I gather there is no Clone Wars era treaty?
Pharaoh asked.
No, Thrawn said. I merely wish to keep him in view until his movement under the tractor beam's pull gave final confirmation of his presence.
He took a deep breath.
Senior Lieutenant Lomar, contact the chief of the Botajev Defense Force and explain the situation. I'm sure he'll want proof. You may invite him aboard at his convenience. Commander Pharaoh, bring the governor's corvette into the hangar bay. Major Ayer, your stormtroopers will board as soon as the vessel is secure. Take care with the prisoners. Take even better care with the artwork. Senior Lieutenant Yeev, bring Special Unit 1 back to screen position with the other ties. Inform all pilots there to remain alert, but that no further combat is anticipated.
He looked at Eli, and Eli thought he could detect a small smile on the Chiss's lips.
Commander Vonto, you will contact the High Command on Coruscant. Inform them that the situation on Botajev has been resolved.